What the Tech is brought to you by RX Bar. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS. Get 25% off your first order of the bestseller variety pack at rxbar.com/Andrew and use the promo code Andrew. That's rxbar.com/Andrew, promo code Andrew, valid only in the U.S. And by Netgear. When was the last time you upgraded your home's Wi-Fi? Turn your Wi-Fi up a notch with Netgear's new line of Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers. Whether you're gaming online or watching Netflix in 4K, you'll enjoy buffer-free streaming with zero lag, no matter how many devices you're connecting to the network. To get more information, go to netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Make your Wi-Fi feel young again. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
I guess I'm pretty good.
We both have a very busy day ahead of us. You are going to the Netherlands, correct?
Yep. You are going to England.
I am going to England. I'm going to England right after the show. I still have not packed. Have you packed?
No.
No, of course not.
But you don't. This is a short trip. This will be easy. The packing will be easy.
The packing's easy for this.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm going to Manchester today. I got a 7:20 out of JFK, and I get there at 7:20 in the morning. It's amazing how that works.
Yeah. It's a 5-hour time change helps.
Yeah. So hopefully I'll sleep on this flight. But we did want to do a show today before we both head off to Europe. I'm in the United Kingdom, technically, but I guess it is Europe. Before we head out,
it's Europe.
I did want to do a show because yesterday was WWDC, and we kind of got a preview of what Apple's planning for the future. I have so much. You were not live tweeting. Very disappointed.
Not for the first hour or so.
Yeah, I was very disappointed in that. But John Prosser was kind of filling in that role for a lot of people with his comments. I was actually going back and forth with him. And we were having a private DM during this conference, and we can never post the things that we were saying because it was terrible. But a lot of it was conversation about how Tim Cook is not Steve Jobs.
No, he's not. I can we hold that against him? I mean, it's a little unfair, but yeah, no one's Steve Jobs.
No one is Steve Jobs. So we do want to talk about that, obviously, and a whole lot more. But before we continue, I want to thank our great sponsor, and that's RX Bar. Listen, I'm traveling right now, and I kid you not, the only thing that is in my carry-on right now is two RX bars. That's the only thing. I always have one in my bag. I absolutely love these guys. And I'm sure, listen, if you're on the go like me, this is definitely something for you. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS, and you get 25% off your first order of their bestseller variety pack at rxbar.com/Andrew and use the promo code Andrew at checkout. That's rxbar.com/Andrew, promo code Andrew at checkout. This is only valid in the U.S., obviously. But the thing about RX Bar is that it's made with a few simple, clean ingredients, like egg whites for protein, dates for binding, nuts for texture, and other delicious ingredients like unsweetened chocolate, real fruit, spices like sea salt and cinnamon. RX bars are gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free with no added sugar, no artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. Comes in 14 delicious flavor varieties and seasonal flavors as well. Whether you like something sweet or savory, chocolate or fruity, they have it all for you. rxbar.com/Andrew. Get 25% off your first order of the bestseller variety pack. And when you use offer code Andrew at checkout, valid only in the U.S. I absolutely love these guys. I'm a big fan of their products. These are not the traditional protein bar that you are used to eating that tastes like chalk. These actually taste unbelievable. rxbar.com/Andrew. Where do you want to begin with this Apple event, Paul? You pick.
I pick. We should just go to the beginning.
Let's go to the beginning. I thought you were going. What happened in the beginning? Go ahead.
No, I mean, they talked up each of their major platforms. And so if I remember correctly, the first major platform they talked about, was it the watch or the TV?
They did the watch. They did the TV.
Yeah. I would say those two were the least interesting, right? I mean, it seems like most of the action was around iOS and the Mac this year.
And Tim Cook talking about PlayStation and Xbox was like a very uncomfortable moment.
Well, I mean, for people who want to game on iOS especially, but iOS and tvOS, I guess, they have those controllers that are compatible with those systems, but the DualShock controller that they have on the PlayStation, the Xbox One controller we have for Microsoft, I mean, those are, you know, that's what you want. That's the pinnacle. So that's great news.
Yeah. So they spoke about watchOS. You could get different faces again. Just the typical stuff. I guess the big story was, one of the big stories, and we'll go into this now, iPadOS. iPad is splitting from iOS. It's going to be called iPadOS, and it's going to integrate a lot of stuff. Like, mouse support is introduced, and it's hidden in the accessibilities, but it has mouse support now on the iPad. You also have USB support, so you can plug in your thumb drive, and it'll show up in their under their files, I guess their Finder, whatever they're calling it. Files, right? It's called Files. What did you think of the split from iOS?
I honestly kind of didn't understand it. There's no reason you can't add APIs to iOS that are iPad specific. In fact, I'm sure they exist today. And so the only explanation I have for it is this split's going to get bigger going forward. Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked a lot about this notion that the iPad is evolving into Apple's mainstream compute platform, you know, for desktop class computers. And I think this is the beginning of it. You know, they've obviously dabbled on the iPad Pro with multitasking features and things like that. But I think this is the beginning of a push where those, you know, iPhone and iPad are going to get more and more different from each other.
Yeah.
So and today should, it didn't make a lot of sense.
They should be different.
I guess so. I mean, you know, one thing that's always differentiated iOS from Android is the fact that for whatever reason on the iOS side, developers often custom tailor their apps so that they look great on an iPad. Whereas on Android, a lot of times it's just the same app, you know, zoomed up to the screen size. So I don't know. That's why I think it's more than what we're seeing this time. I think this is the beginning of a split. If you think about the Mac stuff they announced, a lot of it was really high-end, expensive hardware, kind of confirming my theory that the Mac, like Windows, becomes like the workstation, right? And those things are literally workstations, humongous, expensive computers they were talking about and peripherals. And, they see the iPad as the mainstream computer for the masses. And, it's not quite there yet. The mouse support thing is kind of interesting. You know, Apple being Apple, next year, WWDC will come on. They'll trumpet it as the greatest thing they've ever done because, we found like a lot of normal people were doing it. So we decided, what the heck, we'll give the people what they want. In their typical slow moving way, but whatever, that's fine as long as it happens.
So I kind of want to touch on some of the features that we're going to kind of start. We could kind of speculate mm-hmm. on the split between iOS, iPhone and iPad. Part of it, this was a question I had for you. So they kind of announced that iTunes is done, right? A couple of days ago, it kind of came out, but they have essentially said that they're splitting it into three different apps, and that's the TV app, podcast and music. What does this mean for Windows?
Well, right now, nothing. iTunes remains on Windows. You don't expect any upgrades or updates or anything other than maybe security updates. And that's no surprise, right? I mean, Apple doesn't put their software on other platforms unless they absolutely have to. You know, back in 2003 or whatever year that was, they had to. Microsoft or Windows was the dominant computing platform on Earth. Today it's not. But, you know, the weirdness of this to me is there are 1.5 billion Windows PCs out in the world. There are only 100 million Macs. I mean, it's 1/15th of the size. You know, in many ways, Apple would be better served by putting its apps on Windows than on the Mac, right? Except that that's not all the calculation that goes into that. They'd also be better served by making them web apps, which, of course, they'll never do. They're, you know, the native apps are part of their lock-in strategy. So I don't know what to expect. I guess, you know, we're in a weird period of time with Windows. About half the users are on Windows 10, half of them are not. The Windows 7 support lifecycle is about to end in January, and so presumably a lot of those people will come over. Very soon there'll be like a billion plus people on Windows 10. At that point, does Apple release those apps on Windows as store apps or something? I don't know. I mean, no one knows, right? I mean, that's one possibility. The other possibility is they just don't care, and they leave iTunes sitting there basically not updated, you know?
Well, maybe a lot of their business is not coming from that side.
I mean, of course, we don't have any insight into that, so it's hard to say. Yeah,
you know, why would you purchase, if you have Spotify and you can pay $9 a month for Spotify and you have all your music there and your podcasts are on there on the Windows side, why would you? I wonder how many people are still purchasing music via iTunes.
I think the way to think of it is, there's a you know, some 800, 900 million people, whatever the number is, that are using iPhones. There are only 100 million people using Macs.
Yeah,
that means that the, you know, 90 or 80% of those iPhone users are not using Macs. So it does make sense that Apple might want to put their digital media ecosystem stuff on Windows, because, you know, they're all about services supposedly, right? And you know, people with an iPhone might want to use it with Windows, or, you know, just like they might want to use it with a Mac. And so you can make that argument, but they're Apple, right? And so they're all about lock-in. I mean, they're very comfortable disadvantaging their own users so they don't have to support a platform they don't like, you know, if they don't need it.
No, so I agree with you.
By the way, so one, I mean, just a related note, you know, Apple Music is on Android, right? Because it has to be. Because they're disadvantaged against Spotify on Android. Everyone on Android is just going to use Spotify otherwise. And so this is an attempt by them to prevent that from happening. Well, why isn't Apple TV on Android? Why is an Apple podcast on Android? You know, they don't even do that. So I don't know, anyone expecting them to support Windows going forward, I wouldn't bet money on that personally.
You know, it would make my life a lot easier if they were on Android for Apple podcasts, considering I got to tell people like 10,000 different places to find the show.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if this is beneficial. Because think about how many people came in from iTunes. Like, let's say the podcast side, right? How many people listen to podcasts via Apple's, you know, via iTunes? And now that it's split, how less likely are you to go into the Apple Music app and download music when you're actually using the podcast app? I think the integration kind of helped across all their platforms because everything was there. So you're just in one unit. And they kind of made a joke out of it that it was too bloated and too filled with all different stuff like movies and TV. But I think that was the benefit of that application more than anything else. Considering
I mean, if you're using if you use iTunes to play music for some reason, it's not like you're confronted by the complexity of all the other stuff. I think because it's not all on screen at one time, so the impact there is probably just the size of the application, the performance. Yeah. That results from that. I'm sure that stuff is horrific on the Mac as well. I have no idea, but I don't. A lot of the things that this company does don't make sense to me. But that's because I sort of think of it in terms of what's best for users, and you know, and Apple doesn't think like that. That's, I think, the thing we all have to mind. You can forget the marketing; it has nothing to do with making your life better. It's about making Apple better, making their business better, making, you know, every customer they have pay more money all the time to them. And there's a lot of thought that goes into that with regards to rival platforms. Making your life better because you're a Windows user is not in the Apple playbook, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just not what they do. So I don't know. It's too bad.
It's too bad. So we don't know what's going to happen on the Windows side as of right now.
Well, we know that iTunes is going to remain on Windows. They're not making those apps. I mean, that doesn't mean it couldn't change. I mean, anything could change in the future. But for now, they're just iTunes. There is no change.
There's no change at all. Let's talk about iOS. iOS 13 beta. Are you running it right now?
No. I had let my Apple developer program thing lapse. It's $99 a year. I looked into, I might do, maybe when I get back, I've, you know, like we talk, we have trips coming up and I'm not bringing my iPhone with me anyway. So I think maybe when I get back, I'll look into doing that. In July, there'll be a public beta. But based on the demos they did, based on the screenshots I've seen and everything, I mean, it looks good. You know, it looks good.
It's what it was. You know, it's a nice transition. They've added dark mode. Big deal over dark mode.
Well, it is a big deal, isn't it?
It is a big deal.
I mean,
yeah. They've added dark mode. They spoke about updates to the Messenger app and the Photos app and things like that. Just, you know, small upgrades, small updates, obviously some security stuff. Did anything stand out to you specifically that they're doing with iOS 13?
Just dark mode. There's all those little things in iOS we always complain about they're not fixing. I mean, I think there's some, like, the icon placement stuff, but this is classic Apple. I mean, there's a ton of little things. That's kind of the way they operate. But dark mode was a big deal on the Mac when they did that. Was it last year? It seemed like it was longer ago, but I guess last year.
Yeah.
It seems like it's going to be as big of a deal. It may be even a bigger deal just because of the size of the base on iOS. Looks good.
Yeah. Also, it was announced Mac OS 10.15. It's going to be called Catalina after Catalina Islands. The company introduced a bunch of new features for Mac OS. iTunes obviously getting split into three different apps, Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, and Apple TV. Project Catalyst, which was, it had a different name, correct?
Yeah, it did last year. Yep.
Marzipan, maybe? Yeah,
there
Marzipan.
You go. Yeah.
Lets you use your iPad apps on the Mac. Now, that's interesting how they set iPad apps.
Yeah, so remember last year, they were talking iOS, and I always referred to them as iPad apps.
Yeah.
I think it's not that it's horrible, but, you know, one of the goofy little things you can do on Android is you can run on Chrome OS is you can run an Android app. And if you shrink it down, the smallest size it will be is it looks like a little phone screen hanging there as a window. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just unusual, you know, compared to the way we run apps typically on Windows or the Mac or on Chrome OS. And so Apple never showed anything that looked like that. And if you shrink those apps that are available in macOS down today, they don't shrink down to phone apps. And so I always refer to them as iPad apps because that's what makes sense. Like we were talking earlier about how iOS developers, for whatever reason, have done a good job of making iPad-specific versions of their apps. So when you run them on the iPad, they look great full screen. They take advantage of the real estate and all that kind of stuff. Those are the apps that make sense on the Mac. And that's what they're talking about finally, because that's what it always was clearly. But it's neat. I mean, you try to think like through this, like what's the point of this? It's a relatively small user base, right? If we, you know, there are 1 billion iOS devices out in the world, right? That doesn't mean there are 1 billion iOS users, but, you know, most iPad users probably own an iPhone 2 or whatever. But let's say there's 800 to 900 million iOS users, right? So a little over 10% of them have a Mac, you know, and it's like, well, if you went to a developer and you said, look, we can raise the potential audience by 10% at no cost to you, most developers would probably say, okay, I mean, that's not actually that great, but it's free. I don't care. But that's not what Apple's doing, right? I mean, for an iOS app, an iPad app to get on the Mac, you got to take advantage of Mac, you know, eccentricities. I mean, the thing you really need to do is go in there and change your app to make it work better for the Mac because the Mac doesn't have touch and so forth. And now you're talking about doing work.
Yeah.
And are you telling me, like, you want me to go screw around with my app in the hope that some tiny percentage of users might actually use it on the Mac? I just don't see the value there for most apps, you know?
I think the value for it's for Apple, right? To build
that's what I mean. You got to always look at it from the perspective of who does this really help?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious what apps we're going to see with this. Launching.
Well, I mean, there's a whole basic range of media apps that I think could kind of come over and make sense. You know, Hulu, like, Netflix, that kind of stuff that probably aren't on the Mac, or maybe they are. I don't know. But,
and by the way, you could still Spotify. You could access those via application. Spotify has an standalone application on the Mac.
No, I know, but from the developer's perspective. So, okay, I just said, why would an iOS developer choose to do this? They wouldn't. But what about those apps? I mean, what if you said to Netflix and Hulu and Spotify, who you're saying have native apps on the Mac?
Well, not Netflix and Netflix and Hulu, obviously via browser, but Spotify's on there, Skype's on there,
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. There's a different value proposition if they're maintaining two different native apps, right? Because now you can say, okay, hold on a second. You don't have to have a second team making a native app. You have to do a little bit of work to get the iOS app to be perfect on the Mac, but you can now have one app. Actually, there is a little benefit to that. For the services that have websites, which is going to be all of them actually, right? Netflix, Hulu, everybody has a web version. You know, it gets tricky because you're going to always have a web version. Doesn't matter what Apple does. It's just everyone will make their own choice based on their own needs, based on their own users, I guess. Yeah. But I just don't, I mean, it's one of those things we've been talking about this stuff for years, this notion of like these hybrid platforms, you know, desktop platforms running mobile apps. It's really cool because like the Mac, but it's really cool from like a user perspective, right? Like the Mac doesn't have a lot of apps. You know, Windows doesn't have a lot of apps in the store anyway, like the kind of the new modern apps. Like getting those apps there, Chrome OS has no apps basically, right? So getting mobile apps onto those platforms vaguely, like kind of theoretically, is kind of it's fine. It's a win-win. Like it's who cares? But like from the perspective of the developers, it's actually not that clear cut what the value is there and depending on what they're doing. So I'm curious to see how this goes.
Well, I'm thinking like you look at Microsoft, right? Microsoft has mm-hmm. Word and Excel on the Mac.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would it be beneficial for them to keep developing the way that they are currently as a native Mac app, or should they be concentrating on building their right. iPad version up to be full-fledged and have that as the application?
Right. So there's two things to that. There's the piece we don't know. Like I said earlier, I believe that iPad OS is going to continue evolving to become more of a professional platform for apps, and things could change. As of today, no. Microsoft has, let's call it decades of app experience on the Mac. They have very mature, full-featured Office applications. Replacing those with more limited mobile apps makes no sense today. You know, in the future, as the iPad improves, that maybe those things catch up, because at some point you kind of cross a line where it's like, well, actually, you know, we can do enough of what we need to do on the iPad OS version, and that will run on everything. Why are we maintaining, you know, two versions? It's also kind of a nice way to modernize an app code base, because that iOS version, you know, will be more modern just by the nature of it. But you know, that's going to depend on the app too. You know, like I said, Microsoft Office is a very specific example. They've been around for a long time. They have a huge team of people working on that stuff. For the smaller app developers, they're going to be seeing a lot more volume on iOS, depending on the app, you know, and maybe it will make more sense to drop native Mac apps. And that's kind of a weird situation, right? The point of this endeavor was to get more apps on the Mac. You might actually see apps getting dropped from the Mac.
Yeah.
You know, I just realized I don't have my drink.
You don't have your drink. All right.
I'll be right back. It's ready.
Go get your drink. While Paul gets his drink, I want to take a minute and talk about our great sponsor, and that's Netgear. I recently just installed a Netgear router in my house, and it is the Nighthawk. Netgear's new line of Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers are great whether you're gaming online or watching Netflix in 4K. It's like giving your data the VIP treatment. You'll enjoy buffer-free streaming with zero lag, no matter how many devices you connect to your network. Upgrade your router at netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. That's netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6, and make your Wi-Fi feel young again. When is the last time you upgraded? That's the question you got to ask yourself. I've had the same crappy Fios routers sitting here, and the fact is that everybody's connected wirelessly. All my devices are now wireless. I'm not running Ethernet lines around my house because it's good enough. Wi-Fi is good enough, and it gets the job done. But unfortunately for me, I apparently live in a house that has just metal shell around every room, and I can't penetrate out the room. Actually, the problem is I put these exterior doors in my office, and my signal doesn't reach. I hooked up my Netgear router right on the outside here, and it's doing an unbelievable job. I absolutely love it. I'm able to stream everything, no problem. I have gigabit service, so I have plenty of bandwidth, and this handles the rest. Zero lag. I have virtually no lag with anything I'm doing right now. You get four times it has four times the capacity compared to today's Wi-Fi, current Wi-Fi systems, which means you can connect more devices, which is a huge plus. Netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. That's netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Let's continue more. That's, I'm pressing the wrong buttons here. There we go. I can't see what I'm pressing. So it also added an interesting feature. Now, I've been able to do this with a third party for a long time, and they're calling it Sidecar. So it lets you use your iPad as a secondary display for your Mac, both wired and wireless. I did not think that this was necessary, but the amount of times that I've used my iPad with a third party to do this, I think this is a nice little extension to the Mac. What do you think?
Yeah, actually, the first thing I thought of when I heard that was maybe this is Apple's response to the Mac doesn't have multi-touch, right?
Oh, interesting.
Maybe. You know, I mean, if you're using an iPad mini or a 9.7-inch iPad or something, I don't know that that's such a great idea. But some of the iPad Pros have, you know, pretty big screens. Yeah. And you could have that thing, you know, as a dual display setup with your Mac. And I bet a lot of people today probably sit there at a Mac and they do whatever they're doing. They're writing programs in Xcode or they're, you know, doing Photoshop or whatever it might be, you know, kind of these big complex applications. But maybe they have an iPad over on the side or just a phone even, and they're doing that for email and social interaction, whatever it might be. If you could integrate that screen with your Mac, I mean, I think the primary benefit there, in a way, is that the screen remains on. And I know that sounds kind of goofy, but one of the dumb things about an iPad or an iPhone is if you look away from it for like 1 second, the screen goes black, and then you have to sign in again with your finger or whatever, or your face or however it works. You know, as a dual screen thing, you could have that stuff running, but it's part of the Mac environment, you know?
Yeah.
And it would just kind of, you know, it's not like, you know, when you're using your Mac or PC today and you have two screens, like one of the screens doesn't turn off because you're not using it. Like, you know, it's kind of always on. And I know that sounds like a small thing, but I don't know. That might be the point, you know?
Yeah. They've also added.
It's a good idea.
I think it's a very interesting idea, considering you've been able to do this with a third party for a number of years now, and it works pretty well. So having it incorporated, I assume it'll work flawlessly. That's the hope. Voice control lets you control your Mac entirely with your voice. Okay, that's pretty cool for accessibility. Screen time is now available on the Mac, so you can now understand your usage of your... I think that's going to be interesting for me, because I tend to use my laptop way more than my phone. I only use my phone if I'm traveling, like in the process. So I rarely have this in my hand at home. People find that very annoying, because it's almost like my phone is at home. I barely look at it. So I do everything on my computer. Find My, a new app that combines your devices and friends. I missed this part. What is this?
Well, remember, today iOS has separate apps for Find My iPhone and Find My Friends. And this was rumored before WWDC that they were going to be combined into a single app.
Does anybody use that application, Find My Friends?
No, probably not. So, the truth is most people don't use Find My iPhone either unless there's an emergency, right? And I think the point of Find My Friends, as I recall from the original introduction, was that your family's going to Disney World and you kind of split off into different directions and two of the kids go left and you and your wife go right, whatever it is. You know, you want to be able to find out where they are in the park in this scenario or for those people that need that kind of thing or want it, like that's huge, right? So, these are apps, or now one app maybe, that people don't run like daily, but they're important to have. This is good functionality.
Have they updated Find My Friends at all or no? That's an old app. So by the way, I do use Find My iPhone. I use Find My iPhone every week.
Let's see.
Cause I leave it somewhere in my house and I ping it so I could hear where it is. So that's an app that I use all the time. Actually, this will be great for kids to kind of know exactly where your kids are.
I think that's the primary point, parents and kids. I don't have it on my phone. So yeah, Find My iPhone, I guess we're calling it.
Updated photos app and a new start page for Safari. It was minor changes to the photos app, obviously. A newly redesigned reminders application. This is going to be available. It's available right now for developers today. I have not installed this. I tend not to install the developer version. On my main one, I'll probably put on my secondary one when I get back. But listen, updates look good, right?
Yeah, no, it looks solid. It all looks good. I mean, like I think I said this, if I didn't, I'll just say it again. I mean, with iOS, it's easy with Apple to be cynical, right? Because they move slowly. They introduce things as if they just, you know, invented them on the spot. Like, we're the only ones who have ever done this, when in fact, this functionality has been around for a while, you know? So you see a lot of that in iOS, you see it in the Mac, you know, whatever. But, I honestly, this afternoon, between meetings and whatever else I got, I'm going to go over this video again and kind of look for little things here and there. But I mean, overall, I don't really come away with a hugely negative feeling about this event. I mean, I think for people using these platforms, they're all improving in some material way. Yeah, you know, I'd like to move a little quicker. You know, yeah. The mouse thing on I guess it's just an iPad OS, is a little goofy, you know, but they're getting there, you know, and I think it's all good. I know this is not the cutting, insightful commentary you're looking for. But I mean, it's mostly good.
So the other piece to this was the announcement of the new Mac Pro. So what they have done,
that's where it gets less good.
They went to an appliance of sorts with that crazy garbage can style Mac Pro that they announced a number of years ago that was delayed and was just not great. They have gone back to the cheese grater.
Yeah.
And boy, have they gone to a cheese grater. They actually, it's a full-fledged tower, resembles the previous Mac Pro that people praised. This thing is a beast. You could spec this thing out to almost $50,000.
Yep. Just like a Tesla.
It's like a Tesla. First of all, who's the guy buying the $50,000 version? Anybody? Tell me somebody. How many of those?
By the way, it's not a person, right? It's a
company.
You know, Weta or Disney, you know, or whatever. I mean, this is the people making the next Marvel movie or something.
And I listen, totally understand it. I believe that they think they have a market for this.
Oh, I believe that they do have a market for
it. They do,
I mean, this is the market for next workstations. You know, it's a low volume, high margin, high price market. And there are creative professionals that have been kind of sitting around waiting for Apple to do something smart in this space for a long time. So there's probably a backlog of creative professionals in Hollywood, especially maybe in the music industry elsewhere, whatever, that a scientific community too, I would imagine, that, have, you know, will probably jump all over this. So I don't think they're going to have trouble selling these things.
I don't think so either. The new Mac Pro design focuses on modularity and flexibility. According to Apple,
like a tower PC, you mean?
You mean like a desktop?
Yeah.
Users have 360 access to the entire system. And imagine this, Paul. You could upgrade their machine as much as they like.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just like a big boy.
Like a big boy. You can spec it out with an Intel Xeon processor, up to 28 cores, up to 1.5 terabytes of RAM. The GPU, you get a Radeon Pro 580X, Radeon Pro Vega 2 with 14 teraflops of GPU power, 32 gigabytes of HBM2, and Radeon Pro Vega 2 Duo for the video side. 8 internal PCI slots, so you're going to have a lot of PCIe. You're going to have a lot of expansion, so you could put on capture devices and other things like that. Thunderbolt, 2 Thunderbolt 3 ports, USB-A ports, built-in 10 gigabyte Ethernet port. I mean, this is a beast. This really is a tremendous, tremendous beast. They also announced a monitor.
Right. 6K.
6K, and it's actually 6K.
It is actually, 6K. It's a dollar per K.
It's a dollar per K you're paying. Yeah. What do you think of their monitor that they announced?
Again, it almost doesn't matter what I think about it, because it's not for me or any other normal human being.
This is
for those content creators. You're like I said, that you're making Marvel or Star Wars or Jurassic Park or something. I mean, I'm sure those places will eat it up.
I'm willing to bet that there was heavy focus and heavy pressure from the studios to Apple, because I have a couple friends that are in. Not on the level of Marvel, but they are animators. They're graphic artists, they're animators, things like that. And they've always used the Mac Pro. And the last one, they absolutely hated. And it got outdated very quickly.
That was a computer for nobody. That made no sense for anybody. So now they're back. I mean, look, this computer they have is a logical successor to their previous towers. If you kind of just ignore the last generation and God, the several years they wasted. Apple used to make great displays. It looks like they're making great professional displays now. I mean, these are workstation class, right? These are not, again, not for human beings or whatever, normal people. You know, it's like I said this to Brad, I said it on Twitter, you know, these things are like specking out a Ferrari, you know?
Yeah.
One of the goofy things when you move into the luxury car segment is that if you want like basic features like heated seats or Android Auto or Apple CarPlay, you often have to buy a really expensive options package to get that in a car that costs $100,000 or $200,000, which people think is kind of weird, you know? And, but when you're spending like $200,000 on a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or whatever it is, you know, spending $2,500 on an options package to get, you know, vented seats or whatever the thing is you're looking for is like, you know, whatever, who cares? And this monitor is like that, right? Because like a VESA mount for this thing is like a couple $100 or like there's like a stand that costs, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars, whatever it is. Yeah, you know, welcome to the luxury car market. You know, that's all this is. I mean, it's
yeah, welcome it's not to, for us. You know. No, it is not for us. But it is a beautiful display. It's an XDR is Apple's insane 6K display. Obviously 6K res, HDR. This is designed to go along with the new Mac Pro. And it's I believe it's the first for the company since 2016.
Well.
Yeah, so listen, people are going to buy this. Not people, companies, animators, video editors, people are going to buy it.
But here's what I don't understand. These devices, like for normal people, you could make the argument that they're kind of aspirational. Like there might be Mac enthusiasts or professionals who are individuals. You're a graphic designer, you know, whatever it might be. And you'd like those products, but you want the normal version, right? Like I want a tower, but I want it to have an H-class Core i7 or an i9 or something. I want that display, but I want it just to be a 4K display that costs, it's Apple, so $2,000 or something. Like, I'm a little bit surprised they don't have normal offerings as well. It's just all the expensive stuff for some reason. I don't quite understand that.
Yeah, I guess the little one, right? The Mac Mini. Didn't they update that recently?
Yeah.
I believe they did.
I guess.
I think they did. Let me see. Let's see the Mac Mini. Mac Mini. God, this thing is still the same machine, huh? Oh, you got new 8th-gen processors. You could get a 6-core Mac Mini.
No, I know, but there are people who might want to build like a gaming PC. And no, I mean just or just an individual who's a developer and they want the tower. They want to be able to expand it. All they need is a Core i7 or a Core i9. They only need 32 gigs of RAM or whatever. Like, why not have the same box for those people? There are power users that would buy those for a couple, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, whatever.
Yeah. Listen, yeah. I think that people are going to buy this. I did not hate anything, but now we're in this weird bubble where, okay, so what's next? We see where your software is headed, and obviously you're splitting everything. iOS on the phone is going to be different than iOS on the iPad, which I agree, that is the way to go, considering you're putting so much emphasis on this being a laptop replacement. This is some people's laptop.
Right.
So now you also have
the Mac becomes a workstation. Yeah. And we've been, you know, again, this is something we've been talking about for a long time, and you can see it really writ large in this machine. I mean, they've priced it just so there is no confusion. You're not buying it. It's not for you. Obviously, they have iMacs and things like that.
But you know what, though? You are right. They have turned the Mac lineup, MacBooks included, into almost a workstation. Look at the new lineup of MacBooks. You could get an 8-core, 6-core. They have gotten aggressive with updating the CPUs on these things because maybe they realize that that's what's keeping people in.
Well, I think they squandered years through inaction, too. They really did harm to their reputation in this community by not updating all those machines.
Well, they didn't grow. You know, they had the advantage, and they rested on that. And now the PC market is, listen, if you want a PC, I always tell people, I'm a big fan of HP. They're putting out machines, the Spectre line is as good as any MacBook. It looks as nice as any MacBook. And you're paying probably a lot less if you're going with that. And if you're on the Windows side, then you're familiar with the platform. So really, the overall aesthetics aren't enough to keep people purchasing. You got to give something with it. There is a refocus, obviously, within that company for 2020. I'm curious where this ends up.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think there's some clear hints at the future. iPadOS splitting off, I think that's a hint.
Yeah.
You know, the Mac Pro doesn't even encompass what this thing is. It's like pro. There's no word for this. I don't know. What do we call Weta and Lucasfilm and, you know, like what are those companies? They're not just pro. They're, you know, they're the elite. I mean, so
elite.
I don't know what you say. I mean, there are companies that spend millions, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases on a single piece of content, you know, being a movie or whatever, a video game. You know, that's not normal. it's not a consumer market. It's something else. You know, I don't know what to call that. But
the other thing that they did,
bro,
which I found interesting, they were very much gloating on the adoption rate on the Mac side. On the iOS side compared to Google. They said 10% of people have gone over to the latest version of Google for their Android operating system, while 85% adoption rate on the iPhone side, which, you know, that's a kind of a skewed number, but that is true. They have way more success with adoption rates compared to the Android side. They were really big on gloating, huh, for that?
They always are. Yeah. And that's what they do. I've never bought into that. I mean, I think there's a false equivalency there. Because the thing that most people do on their phones is run apps. You know, we're not looking at things that are in the operating system. Like, you know, no one is upgrading to iOS 12 because digital well-being is part of it. They're upgrading because they get nagged about it incessantly and they just want to get that red circle out of the way. Meanwhile, in Android, for various reasons, carriers, hardware makers, whatever it might be, a lot of them are not offering these updates in a timely manner or at all. So people just don't see them, but they would install them if they're available. They just don't really care because the apps they want to run all run. So what's the difference? Like, it's what's the difference? I mean, I don't know.
So
I've never understood that
before
worry.
We wrap it up, because I know you have a 2 o'clock meeting and I have to go start packing. You have a 1 o'clock meeting or 2 o'clock?
Yeah,
whatever. I gotta start packing. So, and figure out, I gotta take a bunch of equipment with me to, on my trip. I want to know a little bit more about Microsoft and what they're planning at E3. Obviously E3, begins soon, right? Next week.
On Sunday.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. And, Microsoft, according to Brad and his posts on TheRock.com, they're setting the bar high at E3. What do we know about this?
Well, there's a bunch of stuff going on that could happen, right? So we know Microsoft's working on a next-gen version of the Xbox One console. This would be the obvious time to talk that up. We know that Microsoft is plotting a cloud service called xCloud. This would be the obvious time for a public demo with that, because it's going to go into public trials later this year. And then there's going to be some gajillion games. I mean, that's the big thrust of E3, obviously. So Microsoft has said, I think they said this last year, I think they say this every year, that this will be their biggest E3, but yeah, of course, you don't go smaller, you know, the next year or whatever. So,
But I mean, we're starting to see the landscape lay out for the next generation. Obviously, that's going to play a part, right?
Yeah, and the interesting thing to me this year is that Sony's not going to be part of this. Like, Sony's not going to have an E3 presence. The presumption at the time when they announced it was that they would have their own event, but then they later said, actually, we're not announcing a PlayStation 5 this year, so, you know, we'll see. I mean, Nintendo, not super interesting. I'm wondering if some of the mobile players, or the new cloud players like Google, Amazon, et cetera, will show up and be part of it. We know, by the way, Google, I think on Thursday, is going to announce the pricing on their Stadia service.
We're still waiting on that.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff in the works.
Yeah, we're still waiting on that, which is...
Oh, yeah, I think, only have a few days to go.
Yeah. Do you think we're gonna? I know on the Nintendo side, there are rumors that they're gonna announce not a Pro, but they're gonna announce a Mini of their Switch, a mini
yeah,
Switch, which kind of makes sense.
Yep.
A smaller version of it that's mm-hmm. more mobile. Which, listen, I see a lot of people with these. Yeah, I see a lot of people with. I see a lot of people with these walking around.
I've almost gone in this direction, and I got to say, you know, with I've examined mobile gaming a lot, specifically with the idea of using a controller. And now Apple has formally announced iOS and tvOS support for the Xbox controller. We know that Google is going to support those in Stadia. I think you can use these controllers already in some capacity or whatever, but I could picture like mobile gaming with a real controller is very interesting to me. And I think, you know, maybe the Switch is what has pushed this over the top for these game makers, that they see the popularity of the Switch and they realize, you know, all we have to do, you know, is make this thing work seamlessly. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. How do you make that work? All right, let's wrap it up. I wanted to do something quick. I wanted to summarize what happened at WWDC this year before I go on my trip and Paul, you go on yours. So when are you coming back?
Friday.
Oh, you're going till Friday?
Yeah, it's quick.
Oh, I come back on Tuesday. So we won't have a show on Tuesday next week. We'll probably, if we could do it on Thursday, that would be excellent. I have to, yeah, so I come back on, I think like 4 in the afternoon on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So
you're not going to be worth a damn for 3 days, dude. So
yeah. So we'll do something. We'll do something maybe on Thursday, the 13th. Paul, safe travels. Oh, yes.
Yes. Actually, going to be in DC next week. Okay. So
we'll figure it out.
But we'll talk about it. Yeah, I don't know what my schedule is yet.
We'll figure it out. Paul, have a safe trip.
Thank you. You too.
Maybe I'll see you at the airport later today.
It doesn't sound like I'll be there early enough, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. Listen, for anybody in Manchester, I'll be in Manchester, so I'm sure I'm going to be doing a lot of drinking over there. So if you see me, say drinking. Hello. You'll be drinking. You're not going to be
drinking.
Why? Drinking.
What terminal are you going out of?
4.
Okay. I think I'm, for some reason, I think I'm in terminal 1. I got to find that.
I'm in 4. You know what's really funny? So Spencer's going on this trip also. So for weeks, I'm like, hey, because we're going for the same event. I was like, what flight are you on? He's like, I don't think I'm on your flight. I don't think yesterday, last night, I'm like, what do you want? And I look at it, he's on the same flight as me.
Yeah, he's coming in from Los Angeles. Mary Jo.
Are you really? Amsterdam. Oh, that's great. Yeah. Oh, so that's nice. I'm flying a Virgin. So it's my first international with Virgin, actually.
Oh, that'll be good. I haven't flown them in years, but they're
great.
That was always a good experience.
Yeah, and I have first class ticket.
Yeah, I actually got a premium seat for this flight.
Yeah, you kind of need
it. That means it's on Norwegian, so it's probably just a normal coach seat. I guess.
Yeah, it's like, well, Delta does that. Delta does premium plus, which is just economy. Yeah.
Actually, by the way, premium plus on Delta is fantastic.
On Delta?
Yeah, I really like it. It's like, it's all I need. It's just enough leg room and enough space. You can actually work on a laptop if you want.
Nice.
Like, to me, like that's enough. Like that's
and
all.
It's
I
better
need.
Than their economy. See, I'm used to JetBlue.
Oh, it's definitely better. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, really? Interesting.
Yep.
Better than extra legroom on JetBlue.
I would say it's similar to that.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool.
A little better. It's a little better than that, actually. Yeah.
Excellent. All right, guys. That's it for this week. Subscribe where everywhere podcasts are available. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. Follow Paul at The Rot. You can follow me at Andrew Zarian. And we'll see you next week. Take care.